SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Factor. Humanity is, for better and worse, in its grind set era. And don't I freaking know it. We are side hustling. We are chopping wood and carrying water. We are waking up and smelling the coffee. We are both hunting and gathering. Going to the grocery store, is this a grind set friendly activity? Is cooking dinner conducive to this entrepreneurial lifestyle? Sometimes we simply don't.
Sarah's coming up with all this off the top of her head. So maybe.
Definitely Sarah wrote this.
Yes, you think of me and you think that's an entrepreneur for 30 under 30.
You do. Don't you pretend do. You don't.
I do grind. Grind. I do. I don't know how not to. Sometimes we. And in this personal attack, me, simply don't have time to prepare a quality meal for ourselves. And yet we need a quality meal to continue that grind.
And that is where Factor comes in. Factor's fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals are delivered straight to your door and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from over 35 meal options each week, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, with delivery plans that match your lifestyle. Order as much as you need, pause, or reschedule deliveries anytime. And as I always say, the more you slack, the less you stack. So stack up a whole bunch of no prep, no mess, heat and eat meals with Factor.
Limits exist only in the mind, says the ad copy. I don't know if I agree with this. I think there's probably some limits, like the speed of light as a real one. But other limits exist. There are some limits that exist primarily in the mind. But Factor meals can exist in your refrigerator. If you head to factormeals.com/tangents50 and use the code tangents50, you get 50% off. That code is tangents50 at factormeals.com/tangents50. to get 50% off. That's both the code tangents50 and the end of the URL. Grind. Code tangents50 at factormeals.com/tangents50. Cold open, because the normal release day for Dear Hank and John, it came and went. And you were like, what happened? And we were like, what happened too? Well, it turns out I sent Tuna a file that was a total of 1 second long. And then we had to go through a whole bunch of work. Thank you to somebody on Twitter who helped me with a little bit of tech support to extract the file from GarageBand, and the episode is saved. But I also wanted to tell you that the subscription window for the Awesome Socks Club is open now and will be closing on November 14th. The Awesome Socks Club is an opportunity to get a delightful pair of socks delivered to you once every month, designed by a different independent artist. We work really hard to make these socks really lovely. We now have both ankle socks and crew socks. And also, 100% of the profit goes to charity. It goes to decrease maternal and child mortality in Sierra Leone. Because here's the situation. You're going to have to buy socks from someone. And is that somebody going to be some stranger who's going to get the profit? Or is it going to be in a way where 100% of the profit gets donated to charity? It's a really lovely experience. Once a month, you just get to be happy. You can cancel anytime. Shipping is free. It's at awesomesocks.club. And if you go to awesomesocks.club/DHJ, Dear Hank and John, DHJ, I just wanted to make it short for you, you'll get $5 off your first month. That's a deal. It's a deal. So go to awesomesocks.club/DHJ right now. While you're listening to us have a spooky, extra spooky episode, and also not know what the future holds for Twitter.com, though you know that future, but we in the past did not. Anyway, awesomesocks.club/DHJ. Let's continue with the podcast. Hello and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John, did you know that in Florida, alligators can grow up to 26 feet?
Is this a Halloween joke, or is this a socks club joke?
That means they have to get 13 subscriptions to the Awesome Socks Club!
I should have seen it coming. Can alligators really grow up to 26 feet, or did you make that up?
Like in length?
Yeah.
I just picked the number.
Oh, okay. I was like, that seems way too long. Because I've seen the world's largest alligator, And I don't think it was 26 feet long. You have also seen the world's largest alligator. It surfaced directly next to our canoe in childhood. Do you remember this?
I do remember that, yes. I don't think it was. The longest, the Florida state record for a crocodile is 10 feet or 14 feet. So they only
for
need
a crocodile.
Well, no, that can't be. I don't know why I said crocodile, John. I meant alligator.
Yeah, I'm offended as a Floridian. And very rarely do I identify as a Floridian, let alone get offended.
I think there's got to be a bigger alligator than that.
So the Awesome Socks Club is taking memberships now. AwesomeSocksClub.com
nope.
is the URL. No, Hank, it is the URL.
Well, that's one of them. Yes, for an amazing reason.
The reason AwesomeSocksClub.com is the URL is because a fan of ours, Buck, noticed that it was redirecting to an unsavory site, AwesomeSocksClub.com, and so he bought the URL and gave it to the Awesome Socks Club. 100% of the proceeds go to support stronger healthcare systems in impoverished communities. You can learn more at AwesomeSocks.club or AwesomeSocksClub.com.
Also, we have two announcements.
One, it's Halloween.
No, it's Halloween. There's sock-related announcement. There are two sock things that we're doing. I don't even know if you know about this, John.
Great.
One, we're doing ankle socks. So you can choose between the socks that go up high and the socks that stay down low. A lot of people were like, we want those socks that stay down low. And we listened. That's what they always say. We were listening to our customers.
We heard you.
We heard
when you.
You
said that you are disliking the lack of a dislike button.
we can't bring the dislike button back, but we can make shorter socks. And so we've done that, and I've put them on my foot, and they're nice. I like them.
Great.
It's not for me. I feel rather scandalous having that much of my ankle out.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely want the lower calf socks.
Yeah. But for many people, this is the ideal sock. And second, we are now shipping out of the European Union, which means that you can get the Awesome Socks Club in Europe and not have to worry about weird customs charges. Hooray!
Hooray! That's great.
If you sign up in Europe, they will ship from the Netherlands.
So it's Halloween. We're going to shift to the part of the podcast where we answer questions from our listeners. And we're trying to focus this week on some spooky questions.
Oh,
some
spooky,
fear-based.
Spooky.
Questions, although our producer Rosianna wrote, I tried to focus on questions about fear, but then I realized that almost all questions are about fear.
Except for questions about socks, which is just be delighted once a month for getting a delightful pair of socks.
Yeah, that's not
once
fear-based.
A month, arriving just like to make you happy once a month from a different
Maybe
independent artist.
Maybe we should make it fear-based. If I've learned anything from American politics, it's to make things fear-based. Like, do you know what will happen to your naked feet if you don't become an Awesome Socks Club subscriber? It will be brutal. It's horrid out there.
It's a terrible world for feet specifically. And our socks will make it so that you are not socially ostracized by your in-group.
Do you want to feel part of an affinity community? If so,
I mean,
never feel alone again at awesomesocks.club.
One of my favorite things about the socks is that when I see people wearing the socks, I can be like, hey, and I put them into my socks. And then they're like, hey.
Yeah, I know. It's great. It really, I just spoke at Harvard, not to brag. And one of the students I met with before my talk, you know, like did the subtle pants leg raise. And they were like, eh? And I was like, I got mine on too.
Don't be caught without them.
All right. This first question comes from Alicia, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I know we talk a lot about how human life expectancy has gone up in recent years. It's gone up so much. And not just in recent years. In fact, in recent years, it hasn't gone up as much. I'm curious, is this because we just managed to stop dying of disease and starvation so much? Or were people actually dying of old age at 30? Always aging. Alicia, you've asked my favorite question. Thank you for allowing me
John, we'll talk about it.
Step up
forever
onto my soapbox.
Can I tell you what I think?
Tell me what you think.
People did. It was not like there's two different things. There's life expectancy and there's lifespan.
Yep.
So lifespan is like how well I'm not saying I know what I'm talking about. I'm just talking.
Great.
So there's an amount, there's like a length of time that a human can live, which is based on a number of things. But one of the big ones is pure dumb luck. So you can be in a society where like the average person dies at 50 and someone makes it to 90 just because they didn't get hit by as many trucks or trains or wagons or whatever people got hit by back in the day.
Right. Sort of.
People always lived a long time, but they just like the things that could get them along the way, they had to be luckier to get that far.
That's largely correct. So for a long time, like when I was a kid, I was taught that basically old age was 40 in the old days. Like the old days were never quite defined, but that was the definition of old age. Like if you lived to be 40, it was some kind of miracle.
Right.
And that's not true, but the sort of popular belief that has replaced it is equally untrue, which is that if you survived to the age of 5 or 10, you were likely to live a long life, like you were likely to live to 70 or 80. And neither of those is quite the truth. So the main reason life expectancy was actually below 30 for all of human history until the last couple hundred years was because of incredibly high rates of child mortality, probably over 50%. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, from what we can tell in Iron Age France, life expectancy was probably close to 10 or 12.
Oh, so God.
Because your chances of dying before the age of 10 were probably significantly above 50%, but certainly not much lower than 50%. Mm-hmm. And so that is the main reason life expectancy was low. And if you lived to adulthood, you had a reasonable expectation of living to be 60 or 70 or 80. Mm-hmm. However, it is also untrue to say that life expectancy has not changed since 1800 for 10-year-olds. It has changed a lot. Like even if you survive childhood, life expectancy has gone way up. One of the main reasons it's gone way up is that until 200 years ago, from like 1700 to 1800, around a quarter of all people died of tuberculosis. And they died of tuberculosis generally in their 20s or 30s. And so that was a huge strain on life expectancy.
Yeah. You know the guy who developed blood transfusions?
Yeah.
He was experimenting on himself and he was trying to figure it all out. And like they didn't know about blood types. So he was rolling the dice a lot.
Yeah.
But he died probably because he took blood from a person who he knew had tuberculosis.
Wow.
And put it into his own body.
Well, he probably didn't know that tuberculosis was an infectious condition.
Yeah, exactly. He did not.
Well, it was believed to be inherited by a lot of people. Somebody, actually a listener to this podcast, recently sent me a fascinating data set and presentation about the debate over whether tuberculosis was inherited or infectious. And it totally makes sense that people thought it was inherited. Like, why else did all the Bronte sisters die of tuberculosis? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, somebody living two doors over, that family never got tuberculosis. It was a weird and remains a really weird disease. So anyway, it's both that we've gotten better at treating diseases and healthcare has gotten better, and that we have gotten vastly better at preventing child mortality, although it's still much too high.
It's all of those things. And even it continues to be. Like, people are living longer now on average.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, like even in the 60s in America because of, like, better treatments for cancer and heart disease.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
You know, like, stuff that, like, we've been alive to see happen.
Absolutely. I mean, child mortality globally has fallen by more than 50% since I graduated from high school.
Yeah.
So these are big changes, and globally, despite the challenges of COVID and the setbacks associated with it, which aren't limited to COVID, life expectancy has continued to increase over the last 3 years, and long may that continue.
This next question comes from Diana, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, but mostly Hank probably, what happens to a human body if it gets buried on the moon?"
Oh, that's a good question.
Some days soon, we'll be having people living on the moon, so probably they will die on the moon. I'm guessing there aren't all the usual creepy crawly things that help decompose bodies on Earth, and no oxygen to help out all those icky processes. So does the body just hang around like normal? like forever? Mm. A woman wondering, but not a Wonder Woman, Diana.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. Hank?
Yeah.
Is it a mummy situation?
It's a mummy situation. It depends what you do, what kind of mummy situation you get yourself into. So if the body was just on the surface, it would very quickly dehydrate and it would become like very much that kind of mummy. But I think there's probably a depth you can get it at where it's far enough outside of the sunlight that it's going to freeze before it has a chance for all that water to get out. Mm. And so it'll be down there. It'll be hard for the water to get out. So you'll just be a frozen body popsicle. Mm-hmm. But in either case, it's going to be either too dry or too cold. So if you're in the sunlight, you can stay warm, but you will lose all your water. If you're buried, you'll be too cold and you'll keep your water. But either way, the microbes will not be able to do their microbe thing because they will either be dead and desiccated or frozen and waiting for some future where they would get warmed up.
All right. So either way, though, it would be bad. Just to be clear, you don't want to die on the moon. You want to die here.
Well, I mean, it's equally bad
no,
for me.
No. It's way. How are you going to get buried at Crown Hill? There is no Crown Hill on the moon.
Yet.
Well, I don't want to be.
It's up to you, John.
The whole joy of being buried at Crown Hill is getting to join all of the people whose tombstones I've walked past low these many years. If I just die on the moon, I'll be dying with strangers.
Here's what we're going to do, John.
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go with a coring rod.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to core every gravesite in Crown Hill. And then we're going to move just the like bits of the core that went through the part where the coffin was.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to take those all up to the moon. And we're going to recreate Crown Hill on the moon. And then all future vice presidents have to go to the moon before they die. That's the
rule. Wow. Wow.
Once you're not a vice president anymore, you go to the moon. It's like, we don't trust you to be here on Earth, getting involved in our business. You're a vice president. You can get up to all kinds of nonsense. Just go to the moon.
The vice president of America, after leaving office, automatically becomes the vice president of the moon, but there's a bunch of vice presidents of the moon.
Right. They all don't have any power by committee.
It's a purely symbolic role. It's like being the Duke of Wellington or whatever.
Like the monarchy. Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, I love that idea. And also, I think the idea of moving 80,000 coffins to the moon is just, it's the kind of thing a billionaire would love. Like, that's the most inefficient use of capital since Elon Musk tried to buy Twitter.
I mean, John, by the time this podcast comes out, the deadline will have passed. And so we will actually know whether or not that happened. So to all of you in the future, honestly, right now, we're not even thinking about it. It doesn't seem that important anymore. But it will, I'm sure it will then.
It will totally seem important. I mean, it's the best way I've ever heard of to turn $44 billion into $0.
I mean, like, less than $0 because it's like you just bought something really annoying. It's like buying a $44 billion rooster and putting it in a cage in your house and you can't get rid of it. And just...
It doesn't even lay eggs.
No, it just does nothing but scream. It's upset. It's sexually frustrated. It's angry. It's imprisoned.
Yeah, it's in a permanent state of outrage. It cannot believe the horror, the existential horror of its situation. And you know what's funny? You agree. Everyone's on the same page. You are completely empathetic to the rooster's position of like, I don't want to be here. Why am I here?
No,
this is weird and unpleasant. No, nobody wanted this rooster. Nobody like woke up in the morning in 2006 and said, I think I'll create a situation in which a human has to cohabitate with a miserable rooster. And yet we can't find a way out of the bind, rooster.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the strange thing is that every morning I wake up and I turn on the rooster.
The first thing I do each morning is check to see what the rooster crowed overnight.
Yeah, what does the rooster have to yell at me right now?
Well, the great thing about this analogy is that in the analogy, I am equally the person who is confused to be living with a rooster, and I am the rooster who is confused to be living with a person. I am both people. Yeah. Like I get on Twitter, right, but- and I crow all kinds of panicked outrage. And then I mm-hmm. look at other roosters and I'm like, why are they crowing so much? Why can't they just be quiet?
But at least I am wise enough to know that I don't want to own all of the roosters. Like I don't think it would be better if only I was in control of the roosters. You know, like
right, it would exactly. If I was,
the, I know
if
I
was,
how to fix this problem.
If I was the dictator of this rooster farm, the would world really would not it. Be better. That's what exactly he was like. I want to pay $44 billion to be the dictator of the world's largest rooster farm, and like, what a bad deal. Once again, they don't lay eggs.
It's not a farm, John. It's a community. It's a community of roosters, and none of them are happy. They all choose to be there.
But that's right. They wake up in the morning and they leave their like comfortable rooster lives to live that's inside right. of like a tiny, miserable rooster fence. All billion
inside
of them.
Elon Musk's house. Like, it's so bad. Don't do that. I don't know. I might not. It might be difficult. I mean, I have not thought hard about this because I don't know whether or not it's the thing. But I don't know how I will feel about. I guess I will. It will not be about my supposition is it will not be about who owns Twitter. It will be about how that person's decisions impact the experience and how I think that it is affecting me and the world. And so I will just, I guess, have to see. But I don't know. I don't think that I am being well served by Twitter.
Yeah.
Being a part of my life.
No, one of the weirdest things about Twitter is that everybody on Twitter knows how terrible it is, right? Like,
yeah.
Twitter is a huge problem. TikTok, on the other hand, whew, that's going to solve all our problems.
No issues at all.
I love, every time I believe this, though, Hank, like every time I'm like, this one solved the major issues. And then about 6 months in, I'm like, no, Be Real has its own problems.
Well, oh, really? Be Real has its own problems?
Sure.
That one did seem like it would mostly be okay.
Oh, no.
I haven't used it.
It's got its own okay. issues.
All right. I don't need to know about it. Here's in reality, like fun time over. No more rooster fun.
God, that was I great. Why don't we go back to the bit?
I think that we solve a lot of problems, and that in the process of solving them, we create a lot of problems. And I think that there's obviously value being delivered to me and others by social media platforms, or else we would not use them.
Yeah.
Now, is that value commensurate with its costs? I don't know. Is it, especially when we look at the costs on society as a whole? I don't know. A lot of people, different people have a lot of different theories about why we are where we are. And I think that's probably not just Twitter.
No. I got one of the emails we got this week was from somebody who was like, hey, I'm listening to old episodes of the podcast, and I noticed that John made not being on Twitter his entire personality for about a year and a half. Why is he on Twitter again? And to that, I can only say, what you don't seem to understand is that I am a rooster, and every morning I wake up, and for reasons that are mysterious to me, I begin crowing, and I cannot stop. Now we can move on to the next question.
This question is from Mary Beth, who asks, dear Hank and John, I'm wondering where in the world I could live that would be farthest away from any venomous creature. Not Antarctica. That would not really be viable for me. Is there anywhere else where I can live without fear of venomous creatures? I guess I'm not so concerned about poisonous things, though if I think too much about it, maybe I should be.
Yeah.
Watchful and waiting, Mary Beth.
Mm-hmm.
So poisonous things are things that hurt you when you eat them. Venomous things are things that hurt you when they bite you.
Right.
Just for clarity.
Right. And
or stab you otherwise.
Poisonous things, it feels more like a mistake or a choice, whereas venomous things feels like you have a complete lack of agency.
Yeah, just in your bed one morning.
And I think the lack of agency is a big part of what freaks us out.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of all fears. This is why we are constantly trying to
impose thoughts of agency onto our lives, which when we do not have them, but we like to impose them.
Right. So this question reminds me of when my daughter was younger and we would be like, where would you like to go visit? And she would be like, well, not Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I would be like, well, Hawaii's great. And she would say, yeah, but the volcanoes. And also, I don't want to go to California because of the earthquakes. And I don't want to go to Florida or the entire East Coast because of the hurricanes. And at some point, mm-hmm. Indiana starts to look pretty darn good. Suddenly, you're like, hey, do I live in the best place? There's no fire season like there is in Missoula. Mm-hmm. It's not bad here. But anyway, Hank, and by the way, relatively few venomous creatures, very few venomous snakes.
Nice.
No scorpions that I know of. I feel like we don't have tarantulas.
Well,
I think the answer could be Indiana.
It's not, but I'm sure that you're doing great on the list. But DeBokey did a bunch of work. And DeBokey
has
come up with a place that does not have mosquitoes.
Mm.
It does not have ticks. It does not have snakes.
Whoa. Oh.
Any venomous snakes of any kind.
Wow.
And this place is a lovely place that you have been to.
Yeah.
And that many people like to visit.
Oh.
But that does experience a fair amount of inclement weather. It is Iceland.
Iceland.
Yeah.
The home of the world's greatest hot dog and the fewest venomous animals.
I was shocked. I was like, no mosquitoes? Everywhere has mosquitoes. But apparently the way that they're...
Well, to be fair.
What?
It is. The fact that you were... I'm not surprised to where they don't have mosquitoes, because when I visited there in August and the tour guide, without a trace of irony, said... in their sweet Icelandic accent, as you can see, Iceland should be called Greenland and Greenland should be called Iceland, because as you can see, the weather here is quite nice, as the like 40 degree temperature was made well below freezing by a 50 mile an hour wind that was causing rain to hit us completely horizontally. Like it appeared that the rain was coming from the ground and this woman's face was being like completely distorted, like a 100-meter runner going 30 miles an hour or whatever, and with absolutely no self-awareness was talking about how great the weather is in Iceland.
Well, apparently it's not just that it's cold. It is so.
Although it is.
But in like Alaska, for example, lots
of mosquitoes.
Lots of
world
mosquitoes.
Capital of mosquitoes.
So it is that they have several large freeze thaw cycles throughout one year.
Mm.
So what moon mosquitoes like happen to find themselves in Iceland? It gets cold. They lay their eggs, and then. It gets warm and the eggs hatch, and then it gets extremely cold again.
Yeah, yeah. There's like one of those August freezes.
Yeah. They've never been able to figure out the weird freeze-thaw cycle of Iceland, and so it doesn't have mosquitoes, which sounds lovely to me. And Iceland seems quite nice.
Loved it.
I think it'd be a tricky language to learn, but, you know, there's 300,000 of them, so you could basically hang out with everybody.
Yeah, I feel like you can get by in English, but I it would probably become an impediment to intimacy at some point.
Yeah, to close friendships.
Right. So world's greatest hot dogs, no mosquitoes. Not bad.
Not bad.
This next question comes from Radu, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, how do we know that knocking an asteroid, as NASA's DART mission recently did, would for sure make the collision with Earth less likely?" Like, due to the huge distances involved, surely we don't know 100% if and where the asteroid would hit us, only probabilities. Isn't there a chance that had we not messed with it, it would have scraped by, but because of the intervention, the asteroid would hit the Earth full on? Without further Radu, I think that this is the best way, narratively,
mm-hmm.
for humanity to end.
We calculated that there was a 98% chance that this was going to save all humans and a 2% chance that it was going to kill everybody. And we took the gamble because it was the right choice.
You got to roll the dice.
We made the objectively right choice. But sometimes you roll two ones in a row.
Sometimes the house loses, you know? I mean.
Yeah.
So is this a possibility, Hank? Because obviously I love humans. I think we are a profoundly underrated species. But we are going to go out at some point, and this would be a hell of a way to go out.
So we do know, well, first of all, this particular, the DART mission in particular, was designed to understand this better. So the DART mission was not designed to protect us from an asteroid. That asteroid was never going to hit us. It's still never going to hit us. But we wanted to hit an asteroid with something and see how much its direction changed. We know the mass of the DART probe. We know how fast it was going. We know roughly the mass of this asteroid. And we know where it would have gone, but we don't know how it's going to respond to being hit by a thing, because asteroids are, like, they're still a bit of a mystery. They're made of, like, sometimes they're, like, a pretty loosely, like, held together pile of rubble. That's just, like, the gravity and electrostatic forces are making it stick together. But, like, is there something strong and hard deep inside, or is it just, like, loosely held together rubble all the way through? Those things behave differently in different simulations, so you want to try it out. Just do a real-life mission and see if it works. And that's what the mission was designed to do. But...
And is there something strong and hard deep inside?
We don't know yet. The data is yet to come.
You're not making it easier.
So... But we are aware that this asteroid, like, there is some variance. It's not 100%, but we have a really good idea of where things in space are heading, because there isn't that much that changes their direction. It's not like they're in an atmosphere where the wind is blowing a different way every moment. There are some gravitational thing, like, effects out there that are going to have very small impacts. And at a very long distance, that matters. But as they get closer, we have a really good idea of where these things are going to head. And we do know that, like, that nudging them could, like, would decrease the odds. At the same time, even going very fast, an object the size of DART, which is not very big, isn't going to have a huge impact on the direction an asteroid is going. But we do want to have a better idea of how that is going to be affected. So that's why we did the mission. And we're still waiting to see how much it did change the trajectory of the asteroid. Mm.
But we're not in any imminent danger of a asteroid apocalypse.
No, in fact, we are in less danger right now than any moment so far in human history, in that we now know where all the big asteroids are.
Right.
We're in the same level of, like, of danger. We just didn't know. Now we know that we're not in any danger.
Follow up question: in terms of non-asteroid apocalypses, where are we?
Well, in terms of from space, comets are a whole different story, could be a bigger deal, because they come kind of out of nowhere.
Oh, great! Thanks for that.
Because they're so much farther away.
Sure.
But then, in terms of various other non-space related apocalypses, so
things inside the atmosphere. Where's your vibe for that?
Yeah. You know, like, I'm pretty optimistic about humans, but less about any individual institution these days than I was once.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of things felt really solid there for a long time.
Things felt so solid
in my life, and it does feel a little bit more up in the air at the moment.
You would wake up in the morning and you would get out of bed, and there the floor would be, and you would be like, oh, just like always, there's the floor. And then, as Emily Dickinson put it, a plank in reason broke and I dropped down and down. Here's another question. I've always been afraid of going outside when it's dark, says Rebecca. But now that I'm moving into my own place for the first time, I need advice on how to beat this fear. As a wheelchair user, I constantly feel vulnerable and worried that I could easily be kidnapped or something. How do I make myself brave enough to leave my front door after dark? With love, Rebecca.
Rebecca coming to the world's number one source for advice on going outside in the dark as a wheelchair user. Dear Hank and John.
Well, yes, obviously, Hank, we're not qualified to answer any of these questions. You're also not an astronomer. But
that's a good point.
I do have advice here. Number one, bring your phone, I'm a big believer in accommodating fears, you know?
Yeah, and you can share your location with a friend or loved
one. That's the other thing I was going to say.
All the time, I do that.
Share your location with a friend or loved one, or several. I have like three people who can find my location at any time, and so I have backups, Hank. It's like the, you know, like how there's the president and the vice president and then the speaker of the house in case anything goes real south.
Yeah. I'm going to check and see if I can see where you are
It's very possible.
I'll share my location with you. I definitely should.
Thanks.
But I haven't.
That's like way more intimate than giving someone a key to your house.
I just hung up on him.
That's weird.
Sorry, I hung up on you.
Did you just hang up on me while you were trying to find
I was trying to find your location.
So I'm in Indianapolis. Spoiler alert. But there are those just functional things. But when it comes to the fear itself, like obviously I'd encourage you to talk to a therapist or some professional. Like Hank and I are not psychology professionals, but I can say one thing that works for me with fears, which is, oh my God, he did it again. All right. That's the last time you get to hang up on me.
I'm sorry.
I was in the middle of saying something important.
I know.
Just stop looking. You can figure it out after the podcast.
I did it.
Can you see me?
I did it. No, but you can see me now.
Okay. So those are like practical things. But the other thing is that if you're concerned about it, I would really encourage you to talk to a therapist or a professional about it. Like Hank and I are not psychology professionals. I can tell you something that works for me, which is instead of denying the fear or saying like, this is a silly, ridiculous fear, acknowledging the reality of the fear and that like the thing that you're afraid of is scary. It's just not likely. And that there's a difference between the size of the likelihood and the size of the scariness. And if I can be aware of that, I find it a little easier to keep from catastrophizing because like your fear is real. It's rational. And sometimes like I can get down on myself and feel like, oh, all of my fears are just like crazy and irrational. And the way they express themselves or like the size of them is often not rational. But the underlying fear, like, is real. It would be a huge bummer for me if Earth got hit by a comet, which I just found out is possible.
We'd probably spot it. Like, it couldn't just happen right now, the way a gamma ray burst could.
Oh, so I'd have a week notice? That's my dream, is to have a week notice that everyone on Earth is going to die in the same moment.
I agree that would be bad. What I'm saying is, like, you don't have to worry about being obliterated right now, this very moment, by a comet.
Hank, that would be fine. Obviously.
I guess you're right.
I'm not afraid of being obliterated instantaneously without any warning by a comet. I'm literally afraid of warning.
Well, if I'm ever in a position where I know you're about to be obliterated, I won't tell you.
I don't know. Maybe I want you to tell me, actually, now that you're putting it like that.
Well,
I don't want like important information kept from me.
Well, if it's more than a week, I'll tell you. If it's less than a week, I'll just let you live your life and we can play Fall Guys until the end.
I like how you're imagining that in this hypothetical scenario, you're the only person I speak to regularly. Like we're in
No. I'm the only one who knows in this scenario.
Oh, okay. So I won't have a hint except that you're going to call me up and say, hey, I'm going to need you to play Fall Guys for the next 3 days nonstop.
Oh, John, I'm coming to Indianapolis. I'm not going to tell you why. I'm on the next flight. I want to spend a little time with you and mom and dad. And it's just because I love you.
Yeah, we're just going to play Fall Guys. No big deal. Like that's.
I'm going to beat that Spider-Man game if it's the last thing I do. And it may be.
And it might be. Oh, golly. That reminds me that today's podcast is brought to you by Fall Guys. Fall Guys, it's apparently the thing Hank would do if he only had a few days to live.
Yeah.
He would just be like, shut it all down. It's time to play Fall Guys.
This podcast is also brought to you by the Plank and Reason. The Emily Dickinson's Plank and Reason. Get it at Home Depot today.
Oh, it's going to break. It already broke.
Yeah.
And of course, today's podcast is brought to you by Elon Musk's Rooster. We are all about to be Elon Musk's rooster.
Oh, and also this podcast is brought to you by Vice Presidents on the Moon. The Vice Presidents on the Moon, they disagree with each other about everything and have no power.
I love the idea of like a House of Lords that's just the old vice presidents, and they meet every now and again, and they hubbub.
They hubbub about stuff, and then they issue statements.
Yeah. Oh, to be a powerless royal. The dream.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Thrive Market. T-H-R-I-V-E is how that's spelled. You may or may not be like me. Here's a thing I know about myself. If I put it in my house, I'm going to eat it fast, in no time flat. And so I like to shop in a way that makes sure that the kinds of foods that are in my home are the kinds of food that should be in my body. You know what helps out with that is having a go-to grocery and household essentials thing that I can that just like pops up on my phone and it's like, hey, do you want to order your monthly thing? And I'm like, yeah. And then I pick the things that I want in my house and I don't pick the things that I don't want in my house. In the moments when I actually have self-control, which is not when I'm standing in front of the pantry. Thrive Market's super great. Whether you're looking for organic kid snacks, low sugar alternatives, or gluten-free pantry essentials, which I absolutely am. And those the pretzel bites with the peanut butter inside of them that make my wife so happy. She's like, I can finally have peanut butter pretzels again after developing a gluten allergy. It's fantastic. And as a Thrive Market member, you save money on every single grocery order. On average, you can save over 30% each time. They even have a little deals page that changes like every day, and you can go and see it and see like, maybe I want to try out some new fun thing. They got all kinds of brands on their website. They got Amy's, Banza, Burt's Bees. They got Mike's Hot Honey, Oatly Olipop, Poppy, Salt. When you join Thrive Market, you are also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join, they give. Join in on the savings with Thrive Market today and get 30% off your first order plus a free $60 gift. Go to thrivemarket.com/dearhank for 30% off your first order plus a $60 gift. That's Thrive Market, T-H-R-I-V-E market.com/dearhank. And they have told me to say it one final time, even though at this point it seems like a lot. ThriveMarket.com/DearHank. This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. They, let them close the thing. Let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, limescale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again, that's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
All right, Hank, let's do a thought experiment real quick. If we owned Twitter, first off, I would hate you so much if we still owned Twitter. If, like, we'd started Twitter and you made me still own Twitter, I would be so resentful. Yeah. That's the first thing. It would devastate our friendship because every time we talked on the phone, yeah, I would be like, how's the family? Also, more importantly, when can we sell Twitter? Why are you forcing me? But imagine if we owned Twitter mm-hmm. and someone, anyone, came to us and said, we will give you $1 billion, which is 1/44th of what the company is apparently worth. And in exchange, you don't have to own Twitter anymore.
I know.
I would be like, oh, wait, I don't understand. I thought I would pay you for that.
It's
privilege.
Like one of those situations where you really have to like try and pretend like you're still negotiating.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Hank. That is the last time that we mention how much we don't want to own Twitter on the podcast.
Okay.
Today.
Look, 10 years from now, when Twitter like doesn't matter anymore and is completely culturally irrelevant,
then I would buy it.
That's when Hank and John snap it up.
I would buy it. Yes.
And it's
yes.
just a sock sales platform. That's all it does.
Absolutely. You're only allowed to tweet about the awesome socks club.
Yeah.
There's an Autobot that's been trained by late stage artificial intelligence that if your tweet is not about the importance of sock subscription services that generate money for charity, uh-huh. it just gets deleted instantaneously.
What? I feel like we could already do this with some like already defunct. Where, like, could we ask Jeeves and name it like Ask Jeeves Socks? Ask Socks Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves anything about the Awesome Socks Club.
How much could it possibly cost to buy Ask Jeeves right now?
You know how much it cost to buy MySpace like 2 years ago? It was incredible. So first off, who do you think owns MySpace? If you had to guess who owns MySpace today.
Isn't it like some like music company owned by Justin Timberlake or something weird?
Okay, so it was first bought by Justin Timberlake for $35 million.
Wow.
And then in 2016, it was sold to Time Inc. for $87 million.
What?
Now, I know what you're wondering, Hank.
What? Oh, my God.
What happened to MySpace between 2011 and 2016 that made it worth twice as much money? And the answer is nothing.
That's horrifying.
And then eventually, Time was bought by another media corporation and then spun off to a holding company that then sold it to a related holding company. And so we don't know how much it's worth today. But the fact that in 2016 it was purportedly worth $87 million is a shocker.
Oh, boy. I mean, it's here. It's hanging out. What year can we buy MySpace for less than $1,000?
Because of inflation, probably never. Maybe okay. In 2200, you know, when after right. the collapse.
Well, it won't be worth like, it. Won't be meaningful then.
I love the idea of Hank and John crawling out of the rubble
yeah.
at the age of 78, you know. Post-apocalyptic.
We're just like, I just want to keep goofing. Let's goof. Let's get MySpace and name it MySocks.
The first thing that we do is we connect one computer to another computer to make what is technically an internet. And then the first thing we do on this new internet is register inside of this new internet a web domain, myspace.com, which redirects to the awesomesocks.club.
Look, there's always another goof.
Oh, God, I want our third act to be so weird. That's my biggest ambition. Like, we've had a wonderful career. It's been beautiful. Mm-hmm. But the only thing it hasn't been yet is as weird as we set out for it to be.
It hasn't been truly, truly pure goofs.
Right. We haven't adequately committed to some of the goofs. Like
yeah.
there's a world where our third act is literally running racks.
It's not like we go to racks.
It's like what would it take instead of visiting
to bring
racks
back?
we decide to call Mr. Beast and say, listen, have we got an idea for you?
It's like Mr. Beast Burger, but it's about my childhood.
I don't know if you've read Gatsby, Mr. Beast, but you can go back to the past. And we are going to get in our little rowboats and we are going to be just row and row and row until we can get back to Racks in 1987 in Orlando, Florida. Can you make this happen for us?
And he'd be like, yes, with 0.05% of my net worth, I can buy every Rax. Because I am now Jimmy, President of America, richest man in the universe.
Yes, and we'll be like, thank you, God King Jimmy.
It does seem to be where the arrow's pointing.
And then on our way out, we will ceremoniously bow to the corpse of Elon Musk in the antechamber of God King Jimmy's office. Mm-hmm. And then we will retire happily to Rax management.
Right. Yes. But in order to leave the antechamber, you do have to walk past 8 million roosters. And they're all very loud.
The only way to like ask a question directly of God King Jimmy mm-hmm. is to run a rooster obstacle course where you have to run
right.
through 8 million roosters, and anyone mm-hmm. who can make it to the door gets to ask for one thing. And most people ask for $1 billion, or yeah. they ask to live forever, or they ask uh-huh. for a beautiful uh-huh. spouse, and we ask for 6 Raxes.
But if you don't make it, the roosters are very hungry.
Well, they haven't eaten in years anything other than human flesh.
No. A very spooky episode of Dear Hank and John this Halloween.
This is my favorite one we've ever done. All right. Before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC, I have no idea how long we've been recording. I have no idea what's happening. Yeah. I tried to look up how long we've been recording the podcast, but unfortunately, you've hung up on me so many times, I have no idea. It's time to move on to the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. I'll go first because I have good news. So I went to AFC Wimbledon's game. I got to see Plough Lane. My kids got to see Plough Lane. It was incredible. It's an amazing stadium. It really is. Like, especially compared to King's Meadow, it's just incredible what has been built. It is a world-class stadium. It seats 9,000 people. It was packed.
It was packed. I saw the pictures.
It was a sellout. And it was just an awesome experience. Going to the pub was amazing. The food was really, really good. It was just awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I cannot, if you live in London or go to London, I really recommend going to Plough Lane. You'll have a great time. Tell people that you're a nerd fighter and you'll have an awesome time.
Hmm.
We lost that game. We mm-hmm. lost 1-0. We played horribly. It was terrible. Alice and I went to see our local college Butler, their women's soccer team play. And, afterwards, I was like, how does that compare to the AFC Wimbledon game? And Alice said, oh, those girls are much better. And they certainly keep it on the ground more. It was not a good performance, is what I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, at the end of the game, at the end of the AFC Wimbledon game, and like getting to see Plough Lane and knowing that, you know, those players had signed her birthday cards since she was 2 years old, Alice looked at me and she said, that was amazing. And it really was. But unfortunately, we lost. And however, our next game, we won. It was a big day. It was a big game against Rochdale or possibly Rochdale. Nobody knows for sure. And they're at the bottom of the table. We're a little closer to the bottom of the table than I would like for the fourth tier of English football. Mm-hmm. And we really needed to win that game. And we won 2-1. Goals from Ayoub Bissall and James Davison, and looked pretty good. I mean, not great, mm-hmm. but looked steadier. So,
well, when you weren't here, John, we had Mark Watson on.
Yeah.
And he's a big follower of a not great football club that is, I think, a tier or two ahead of AFC Wimbledon.
Sure.
But he looked at your situation and he was like, oh, they're doing great. That's great. They're fine.
So that's how
he felt.
I'm glad that he feels that way. It is critically important not to get relegated out of League Two because yes. there's only 2 relegation spots. It's so hard to get back up. It's the bottom yeah. tier of professional football, like full-time professional football. So, like, it's really, really important. So I'm sympathetic to Wimbledon fans who are really, really scared because mm-hmm. it would be so bad. We have a lot of debt. It would be really bad. So
yeah.
I agree that we're probably fine, but I would rather be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to win some games.
Yeah. It's a tough situation. And I think a lot of fans feel like we're running up against some of the inherent challenges of fan ownership. And that's a really interesting, right. complicated, difficult time. For me, mm-hmm. fan ownership is essential to what AFC Wimbledon is. But that's also easy for me to say when, you know, I don't have to go watch us lose every week.
Yep.
What's the news from Mars?
Well, NASA wants to save money by crashing into Mars. The idea involves a device called SHIELD, which stands for Simplified High Impact Energy Landing Device. It looks like a collapsible upside-down pyramid. It would absorb the energy from a hard impact on Mars. And if SHIELD works, it would make landing on Mars way cheaper, possibly open up a bunch of landing sites for future missions. So the idea is that you land your craft on Mars by just crashing it into Mars. Now, it's not going to work for a number of different kinds of things, but for some, maybe it will. The design is based on NASA's Mars sample return campaign, which involves future spacecraft crash landing on Earth with samples from Mars. Scientists want to see if they could use the same idea, but in reverse, with a shield system that would protect all the necessary electronics during landing. And they tested a full-size prototype made out of metal rings set up in an inverted pyramid shape. By taking it out to a 90-foot drop tower that has a launch system that can send things to the ground at the same speed that they would hit Mars at, which is around 110 miles per hour because of atmospheric drag slowing it down from the initial speed of 14,000 miles per hour. And they used the drop tower to launch into a 2-inch thick steel plate just to put it through conditions that would be harder than crashing on actual Mars, which is softer than a steel plate. And it worked. Using a high-speed camera, scientists were able to see that the impact, they shielded a slight angle. It bounced 3.5 feet into the air, and then it flipped over. The bounce was probably caused by the steel plate because it didn't happen in other tests that used dirt instead of a steel plate. Importantly, SHIELD was able to protect the electronic devices on board the prototype, including a smartphone. So if your iPhone can survive it, then a Mars probe can survive it too.
Wow. So we're just going to crash stuff onto Mars. No need to worry about landing.
It saves so much weight and so much worry if you could just hit it like a bullet.
Wow. That's fascinating.
It is.
So it would be a way to get rid of the parachute, get rid of the, you know, all
retro
that.
Rockets, get rid of all the like sequence of,
which is a lot of the, a lot of the weight.
It's a lot of the weight. It's also a lot of the worry, and it's a lot of the engineering that you need to do. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's awesome.
NASA blows my mind.
NASA's pretty great.
Well, Hank, thank you for podding with me. Thanks to everybody for listening and for your questions. You can email us questions at Dear Hank and John. And of course, most of all, thank you to our God kings, whoever they may currently be, for their grace and beneficence.
Or in the future. Also, for future God kings, we also appreciate you.
We love you. And all we ask, God kings of the future, is
I just want to be able to sell my socks. Just let me sell my socks. That's all I want to do anymore.
I don't need to do that. I want to apologize to the future God queen for speaking of God kings.
we got ourselves in a lot of trouble here, didn't we?
Massive mistake. She's gonna send us to Iceland.
Hooray! Go snakes! No, John, we're going to be on the moon with the vice presidents, and you know it.
Oh, God. That's truly my nightmare. Just living on the moon with Dan Quayle. This is close to hell as I can imagine.
Oh, it's an honor, God Queen, to be on the moon for you.
Thank you. Thank you for not separating my head from my body.
This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunamedish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. All of these people are really, they have to deal with our bull****.
I'm grateful to them.
They have to deal with our BS, and we're very grateful to them.
Yes.
Don't curse, Hank.
Thanks.
That creates more work for Tuna.
It's true. Our editorial assistant is Tabuki Trucker-Vardy. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.